I just jumped ahead there in Genesis chapter 39. And we'll spend a lot of our time towards the beginning in the book of Genesis. And we'll start in chapter 39. And as you're turning there, I'd like to just say thank you again for having me. It's always such a pleasure to be here. Over the last several years that my family and I have been in Athens, we've gotten to know several of you. And have formed some good relationships. Of course, some of you visit Marion Street, and we have some family members here of members at Marion Street. But there's one name that goes here, and I don't know if I told you this last time, and I don't know if he's here tonight, but we have a celebrity in our house by the name of Scott Bobo, and it's because it's such a fun name to say. And it started when I took my son with me to get my car serviced, and he knows Scott Bobo now. And now I actually had to call him yesterday for something, and my now 18-month-old goes around the house, Bobo, Bobo, Bobo. So I always like messing with him, that he's just a celebrity in our house. But no, it's good to be here, and you all are such an encouragement to Marion Street and what we do over there. And of course, Casey has come and helped us with our summer and spring series, and I'm glad that I could be here with you all this evening. It's hard to imagine, if you're a fan of TV and television, it's hard to imagine our life without reality TV. You turn on almost any channel and they have their own form of some form of reality TV. And I remember when reality TV was just starting to become a thing. And I feel like it started with shows like Survivor, Amazing Race, and then slowly what started to happen is you get all these other reality TV shows about weight loss, about buying and selling homes, about remodeling homes, about dating, or simply just following normal families on an everyday basis. I don't know if there's anything normal about the Kardashians, but we love it as a society, and that's reality to a lot of people. Rarely, and I hate to burst anyone's bubble in here, but rarely is reality TV real. Let me give you an example. I grew up in Southern California, specifically Orange County. And during my high school years, there were two very popular shows going on. One was called Laguna Beach, The Real Orange County. Some of you might have seen that show, and I don't recommend it. But then there was another show at the same time going on called The OC, stands for Orange County. One was reality TV, the Laguna Beach, about, you know, teens and high schoolers and what real life is like in Laguna Beach and what the real Orange County is like. And the other show was scripted, but it was supposed to show still what real life was like in the OC in Orange County. Now, I grew up in Orange County. Spent 18 years of my life in Orange County. I have never experienced one thing from any of those shows. And we call it reality TV. In fact, when I would go to Florida for school and people would find out I'm from California, they'd say, "Where in California are you from?" And I would say, "I'm from a little town, Fullerton. It's in Orange County." They say, "Oh, is Laguna Beach real?" I say, "Well, the place is. The people are just paid actors trying to make a living and trying to get ratings and viewers." But here's the thing about reality TV. We want it to be real. Because when the cameras are on, we feel like it's real and it's a show and it's exciting. But have you ever wondered what life is like when the cameras are off? Reality TV probably isn't that real when the cameras are off. In fact, have you ever seen someone from a reality TV show? They're one way on the show, but then they kind of get on a talk show where they can kind of just be themselves. And you say, "Is that the same person?" Because reality TV is not real. But reality TV has done something to our society and just us as a people. We just come to expect that everyone's watching us. And so because everyone is watching us, I mean, think about this. There's cameras everywhere you turn now. If you see something crazy happening in the parking lot after church, what are we going to do? You're going to pull out your camera phones. You're going to record. It'll be on Facebook in the next 5 seconds. There's cameras on the front of houses. There's cameras that they put in doorbells now. And there's cameras on traffic lights. There are cameras everywhere. And everyone is watching. And sometimes it feels like we're living our own reality TV. But the question is, what happens when the cameras go off? And tonight what we're going to look at is we're going to look at the story of Joseph. Now, Joseph is my favorite Bible character. Probably started because my middle name is Joseph, and that's the one I could relate to the most because I am the best of three brothers, so I kind of feel like I'm relating to him a little bit. But Joseph is an incredible example of living a life of integrity and character when the cameras are shut off. Where so many of us feel like we might be in the spotlight, or we have to be careful because I don't want anyone to think about me in a certain way, so I'm not going to do this because I don't want anyone to see me. I don't want anyone to hear me talking like this, but maybe in the own confines of my home, I'll do it no problem because people are always watching. Joseph was somebody. He didn't care who was watching. He didn't care if nobody was watching. He was going to be Joseph. And there's a couple things we need to learn from Joseph this evening, but he teaches us about two words that we use on an everyday basis, but it's the words of integrity and character. Those words are different, but they can be summarized as just the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. And I'm sure you can all think of someone of integrity and someone with integrity. If somebody, as somebody once said, if you want the simple definition, integrity is who you are when nobody is watching. What we see with Joseph, now I'm going to make a claim at the very beginning, Joseph was not perfect. But Joseph, I believe, was a man of integrity. And he was not just a man of integrity, but he was a young man of integrity. And sometimes I feel like what we do with younger people is we say that, you know, once you hit a certain age, and it's typically somewhere out of college, that's when they're now mature enough to be a member of society. That young people in the church, they can't do a lot because they're still young and they don't understand a lot and we can't trust them with certain obligations. But I want to tell you something. Joseph, when he was sold into Potiphar's house, was just 17 years old. 17. In our society, he would have been maybe a senior in high school. Yet this young man was a man of integrity and a man of character. And there's a few things that as we go throughout this, I want to look at two stories. Two little instances. I know this whole summer y'all are going through different parts of Joseph's life, and I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but I think there are two places where we see Joseph's true character when nobody else is watching. When the cameras were off, we see the real Joseph. That's where we start in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 39. And where we see him here is we see him already. We don't need to recount the whole story, but we know that Joseph was not very well liked by his brothers. They sold him. He found himself in Potiphar's house. And here we are, as he is a servant in Potiphar's house. The Lord is blessing Joseph, and all he does, Potiphar takes notice of what Joseph is doing and everything that God has blessed Joseph with. And Potiphar makes him into second command over all the house. There was nothing in the house that Joseph didn't have control over except one thing, and we'll read about that in a minute, and that was Potiphar's wife. But I want you to notice a couple things about what happens here in this story about Joseph's true character and his true integrity. Let's start reading in verse 6 there of chapter 39. As Joseph is serving in Potiphar's house, it says, "Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate." Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass, after all these things, that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in this house. And he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in the house than I. Nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her, to lie with her, or to be with her. But it happened about this time, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was, When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, then she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." Now Joseph, as he's in Potiphar's house, as the beginning of that little section just said to us, Potiphar knew nothing in his house except the bread he ate. He gave everything in command to Joseph. Everything was in Joseph's control. Joseph was popular in this house. Joseph was in command of this house. He says, "My master hasn't withheld anything from me, but one thing, that's you. That's Potiphar's wife." But the text says something here. The text says at the very end of verse 6, and this is the reason I read this verse, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. He was a good-looking man. A good-looking young man. And let's not forget, he was a young man. As I said just a moment ago, in chapter 37, we read that he was 17 the time he was sold into slavery. This might be a couple years later. He had to have time to get into the house, form a reputation, get in control of the house of Potiphar. But he was still, I would say, in his young 20s, at the oldest. I want you to think about, and some of you young men are still there. I'm still in my 20s. I'm 29. I want you to, other men and other women, to think about what it was like to be in your 20s. And I think we're all mature enough here where we can talk about this, but that's about the time when hormones are raging like crazy. And here's a beautiful wife of your master, a beautiful woman. And you're all alone in a house. And she's saying, "Joseph, come lie with me." How many of you have been in a situation like that before? Several of us probably have. Some of us have probably given in, while some of us probably have not, and did the right thing and turned around and go. But I think it's safe to say there are many people in this room that have probably been in the similar situation of Joseph, where nobody is watching. Where there was someone of the opposite sex saying, "Come on, let's take the next step. Let's go just a little bit further. No one will know. Nobody's here. Just lie with me, Joseph." I can't help but to think of how tempted Joseph was as a young man seeing a rich, beautiful woman. But notice Joseph's response. And I want to say something before we get into his responses. As we go through these responses here that he gave, the reasons not to sleep with this woman, I can't help but to think these are the same reasons a lot of people would give to sleep with this woman. And let me show you what I mean. And I'm gonna keep this on the screen as we go through some of these excuses, that what several people would use as an excuse to sin, Joseph used as an excuse not to sin, because of his integrity and his character. Listen to some of these reasons that he gave to Potiphar's wife. He says, "I'm in charge of the whole house." He says, I can't do this. I'm in charge of the whole house. I have responsibilities." Where many people would say, and maybe our society, our sinful society would say, "Hey, you're in charge. You could do this. Who's going to touch you, Joseph? You're in charge of this house." But he says, "No, I'm in charge. I have responsibilities. I'm not going to do this." He says in verse 8. In verse 9, he says something very similar. He says, there's no one greater than I in this whole house. He's looked up to. His character and his integrity are looked up to, he says. There's no one greater than I in this whole house. He says in verse 9, "Nothing has been withheld from me, but one thing, that is you, because you're the wife of my master." Can't you see this list becoming reasons to partake in the sin? "Look at how great I am in this house. Of course she wants me. Nothing's been withheld from me from this house. So why is she being withheld from me? Now, we're not going to get into this a lot here, but just something for you to think about on your own time, because I know y'all have so much free time to think about fun little things. Contrast this with Adam and Eve. One thing was withheld from them, wasn't it? They took it. Joseph said no. But notice what happens here. Joseph did the smart thing. And I tell, when I teach the high school and the college class at Marion Street, I always try to tell them, you know, the question comes up, how do we remove ourselves from situations where we don't want to be in? How do we make sure we're not around sin? I said, well, first off, don't put yourself in the situation. But if you do find yourself in the situation, I said, do what Joseph did. Turn around and run. And they look at me like I'm an idiot, but I say, you know what? I'd rather look like an idiot running away from sin than be caught living in sin. And that's exactly what Joseph did. Joseph then removed himself from the situation. It says in verse 10, it says, so it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. He wouldn't even try to be with her in the same place alone because he didn't want to be tempted that way. I want you to think about just how difficult of a situation this was for Joseph. Nobody was watching. Nobody would have known what had happened. Nobody would have suspected that a slave and the woman of the house would have been sleeping together. It would have been their little secret. After all Joseph had been through, didn't he deserve a little slice of happiness? This was his chance to have a little fun, to be noticed, to feel loved, to enjoy life just a little bit? Didn't he have every excuse in the book to partake in this sin? But most importantly, do you notice what he said in verse 9? He said what was there on the screen. I must have jumped ahead. He says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Above everything else, even though nobody was watching, he remembered one very important thing. God was watching. He says, how can I do this great wickedness and sin, not against Potiphar, not against himself, but against God? More important than all those other things, he didn't want to disappoint God. He didn't want to go against what God wanted him to do. Joseph could have lived his entire life in secrecy. Joseph could have lived his entire life with only two people ever knowing that he slept with Potiphar's wife, him and her. That's not how he viewed it. God would have known. And to Joseph, that was enough. His character and his integrity on full display, because he did not want to disappoint God. That even when the cameras were off and nobody was watching, in one of the most enticing situations that a man can go through, he chose God. But there's a second situation that I want to make us aware of here. Look at what he does in just a chapter later. Well, at the end of this chapter, we know that he's thrown into prison, right? Where she lies about sleeping with Joseph and Potiphar gets upset and throws him into prison. But now he finds himself in Egyptian prison. And if you remember what happened as he finds himself in prison, Pharaoh throws his baker and his butler into prison with Joseph. They each have dreams. Joseph interprets the dreams. He tells one, you're going to leave here and you're going to be hung. You're going to die. I don't know what you did to make Pharaoh upset, but it's going to cost you your life. And the other one, he says, you're going to be restored to your position. And he tells the one, he says, when you're restored and you get out of here, don't forget me. Don't forget. And listen to what it says in chapter 40, starting in verse 23, and it really just the first verse of the next chapter. As the chief butler was reinstated into his position and he had this opportunity to restore Joseph, it says, yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now you have a time period here between that verse and the next verse. It came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by the river. 2 years. At least 2 years that Joseph was sitting there in prison. We don't know exactly how long he was sitting there before the baker and the butler got to prison. But at least 2 years sitting in prison for something that he did not do. 2 years wondering when the day would come that the butler would remember him and what Joseph had done for him. Thrown in prison. Can you imagine Joseph again in this situation? Alone. Alone in prison. No family, no friends. Of course, the Lord, the text says, continued to bless him. Just like in Potiphar's house, he was made second in command over the entire prison. And he was in charge over everybody and every inmate in there. But can you imagine the betrayal that he felt? Every day having to sit in there knowing he had done nothing wrong. And yet he's serving the sentence, maybe a life sentence, never knowing when he would be out. Can you imagine how lonely it would get knowing that your brothers wanted to kill you and sold you? Knowing that the family that you had in Potiphar's house lied and threw you in prison? Can you imagine the betrayal and the loneliness that Joseph was feeling? Think about this. What has staying true to his integrity and character really gotten him in life? What has being a good person ever gotten Joseph? It's gotten him thrown in a pit and thrown in prison. And I can't help but to imagine that here again, as a young man sitting in prison, looking back on his life choices, looking back at, I'm trying to be a good person, but it seems like every time I try to be good, something bad happens. You want to know what people do with that mentality today? They give up. I can't tell you how many people I've known that have tried to do the right thing, been punished for it, or something bad happens, whatever the situation is, and they say, well, I'm done being good. Have you known someone like that? And here Joseph. Can't help but to think about what was going through his mind. When most people would have felt betrayed and lonely, Joseph again stood firm. But I want you to think about something. Because let's step away from Joseph for a minute. When most people feel betrayed and lonely, they tend to find attention in other places. In fact, studies have shown that most Christians find themselves being tempted the most when they're all alone and when no one else is watching. When they feel lonely, when they feel betrayed, when they feel like they're at their lowest lows, that's when studies have shown that Christians are feeling the most vulnerable, the most tempted. Think about this. It's easy to find things on the computer when you're alone. In your room, isn't it? It's easy to find a guy or a girl when you're on a business trip and you have a hotel room all by yourself, isn't it? It's easy to go to a bar all by yourself and hide it from the family. Joseph was all alone. It would have been easy to give up on God. He's surrounded by criminals. It would have been easy to be corrupted. We have that very popular verse we love to teach our young kids, that evil companions corrupt good morals. Well, here Joseph, young man, around a lot of evil companions, thrown in prison. Joseph could have easily been corrupted. He was alone. He was vulnerable. There's a saying, when the cat is away, the mice will play. Unfortunately, that's what we do with sin. When we're alone, that's when we get to have some fun. When I'm feeling alone, when I'm feeling lonely, when I'm feeling depressed, when I'm feeling sad, when I don't think anyone else is watching, when I don't think anyone else will know, that's when I get to have my fun. And again, Joseph had every right to think that way. Because what has being good gotten him so far in life? I want to suggest to us here in today's society, same was true in Joseph's society, but still true in our society, it's when we're alone, that's when Satan loves to be our friend. Did you notice it was when Jesus was in the wilderness all alone that Satan came? That's when we're most vulnerable, when we're alone. Do you notice it was when Jesus felt tempted? He was alone praying in the garden. Yes, he was speaking to his Father, but he was all by himself. His apostles were stone's throw away from him, sleeping, and yet he was saying, please don't let me go through this. When we are at our most vulnerable states, it's when we're alone, for the most part. And yet here's Joseph. As we know, the story goes, as Pharaoh has his dreams, and no one can interpret these dreams. Finally, the chief butler says, I know somebody. 2 years ago, I had a dream, and he interpreted it. It came true. We got to get him. I hope he's still there in prison, because boy, I forgot about him. And so Joseph comes before Pharaoh, and in verse 15 of chapter 41, it says, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. But I have heard it said that you can understand a dream to interpret it. Well, man, here's Joseph's shot. Joseph was finally about to make it. He could have made it on Pharaoh's great court. All he had to do was interpret a dream. Pharaoh said, I've heard you, Joseph, can interpret dreams. All Joseph had to say was, yeah, I can. What's your dream? But notice what he says. Joseph answered Pharaoh saying, it is not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. After all this time, after all these years, Joseph's focus was still on God. He was finally about to have his big break. He says, it's not me, Pharaoh. It's God. God's going to give you the answer that you desire. After all these years, he never forgot who was truly with him. That even when nobody else was there, even when nobody else was watching, God was. God never left him. I think it's safe to say that Joseph never left God. I'm not saying he didn't have his moments, that he didn't question, he didn't falter. But I think it's evident through every situation in Joseph's life, he always remained faithful. Even when he was all alone, away from family, away from home, being wrongfully accused, forgotten about in prison, when nobody else would take a stand for God, when nobody else seemed to be watching, Joseph said, I'll take my stand. This is for God. I cannot sin against God. Joseph, I hear you can interpret dreams. It's not me, it's God. Nobody else was watching, but that was not an excuse for Joseph to give up on God. I want you to think what Joseph went through and what you and I go through. John writes in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of this world. That's exactly what Joseph went through, if you really think about those verses. The lust of the flesh, we just went over what just happened with Potiphar's wife. The lust of the eyes, the pride of life. He was in Pharaoh's court. All he had to say was, yes, I can interpret your dream. What is it? Let me interpret it. He probably had a job for life on Pharaoh's court. But he never once turned against God. I want us to think about just a few things in the few minutes we have left. How do we be more like Joseph? That when nobody is watching, and when we're tempted by these same things that John writes about, when we have lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life, when we have these things, and these are all things that you and I have gone through or will go through at some point, and maybe some of you are sitting here this evening going through some of these lust and pride of the life situations now in your life. I'm not here just to recount the story of Joseph. You could read the Bible for yourself. In fact, just a funny story. On Friday, we have our one-day VBS at Marion Street, and we're going over the story of Joseph. And someone came up to me that we're having an activity, and it was a trivia game that we were going to play with the kids after they hear a portion of the story from Joseph. And someone came up and said, "Can I get some of the points that Joseph is going to talk about so that I know what to quiz the kids on?" And the young girl's daughter was sitting there, and she said, "Mom, it's in the Bible." Yeah, there you go, right? We can all read the Bible. We can get the main points of the story. That's not what I'm not here just to tell you the story of Joseph. Y'all can read that for yourselves. But what can we take from it? What can we learn from it? What are some things we need to remember when we find ourselves in those situations that Joseph was in? What do we need to do? What do we need to remember to make sure when nobody else is watching, we remain faithful to God? I want to leave you with just a couple things, and the lesson will be yours this evening. One is very simple. It's what Joseph, I think, remembered through many stages of his life. But when no one is watching, we need to remember that God is always watching. We read verses like this in the book of Proverbs, and I think we kind of gloss over them. But we read verses like Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 21, "For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths." Notice in the second part of that verse there, "and he ponders all his paths." Notice that the H on he is capitalized. It's God that's pondering our paths. He's watching our paths. He has his eyes out for us. He's watching us. Later on in the book of Proverbs, chapter 15 and verse 3, it says, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good." Now, if these verses don't frighten us, I don't know what will. But to know that the Lord is watching me, to know that He's pondering my past, to know that the eyes of the Lord are in every place, that's not just a little cute saying we can use to scare the kids. How many of your parents tried to do that to you? Remember, the Lord's eyes are everywhere. I got that. My dad had the saying, "I have eyes everywhere." Have you ever told that to your kids? One time I went to the movies in Taco Bell after the movies with my friends, and I wasn't supposed to go to Taco Bell. I was supposed to go to the movies and call Daddy, who was going to come pick me up. He came and picked me up at the movie theater, of course, after I went to Taco Bell, which was right across the street with my friends. He picked me up at the movie theater and said, "How was Taco Bell?" I thought I got away with it. He said, "Oh, no, a coworker of mine saw you there and text me and said, just saw your son at Taco Bell." I thought, oh, I still don't like that coworker, but that's another story for another time. But he told me, he said, "I have eyes everywhere." You might think, right now, he didn't care I went to Taco Bell. It wasn't about me getting Taco Bell. It was about, I tried to keep something from him. I thought I could get to Taco Bell and back to the movie theater before it was time for me to get picked up. He said, "You might think you can pull one over on me, but remember, I'm Dad. I have eyes everywhere." That's what he would tell me. We might think we can pull one over on God, but let's remember, He's God. He has eyes everywhere. He is watching us. And that, again, is not meant as a scare tactic. It should be used as a motivator to say, my God is watching me, and I want to make Him proud. I want to make Him happy. I want to make Him proud to be my God. Joseph could not sin against God. When David was confronted with his sin by the prophet Nathan, he said, "I have sinned against the Lord." Nobody else knew about it, but God did. And if we want to live a secret life of sin, by all means, go ahead and live the secret life of sin. But know that God has eyes everywhere. We can have everyone else fooled but one person, God. I once talked to somebody who was living a secret life of sin. And this was after, of course, they came out into the open. They confessed their sin, but I was talking to them once, and in the conversation, he said, I was so concerned with hiding what I was doing from so many people. He says, I tried to hide it from my wife. I hid it from my kids. I hid it from coworkers. I hid it from people at church. He goes, I went to great lengths to try to hide what I was doing from everybody in my life. And he says, the one person I forgot that I couldn't hide it from was God. And then he started to cry and he says, the one person that I could not hide it from is the only person that's in charge of my eternal soul. He says, it never hit me while I was living in sin. I might have been pulling the wool over everybody else's eyes, but never God's. God is watching. Now Joseph understood that. And so before he got into his life of sin, he just quite simply said, I cannot sin against God. Let's never forget, God's watching. God should be the number one factor in our decisions. Because even when no one else is watching, the judge is. And he's ruling over all things. Secondly, when no one else is watching, remember that secrets don't remain secrets. How many of you have ever told a secret to somebody in secret? And you expect it to stay a secret, but then sometime later it comes out and you're having to now answer for the secret you thought would remain a secret? And now you're having to backpedal and say, well, yeah, I said that, but I didn't really mean that. And we have to kind of re-explain ourselves and all the... Is that ever fun to do? No? If you have toddlers, you understand secrets don't remain secrets. I try, every time we go to the grocery store, I try to slip cinnamon rolls in the grocery cart. And my four-year-old sitting there, and I taught him, one time I taught him when it was just me and him and our 18-month-old, we went to the grocery store, I put the cinnamon rolls in, I said, shh, don't tell Mom. I said, when she finds them at home, all you have to say is, I don't know how they got in there. It was kind of a joke. Of course, my wife doesn't care if we get cinnamon rolls. But there was one time we were all at the store, my wife was there this time, and I put the cinnamon rolls in. Before I can even say anything, my four-year-old, I don't know how they got in there. And I said, you're only supposed to do it when she asks. So of course, my wife turns around and says, cinnamon rolls again, right? If you have a toddler, you understand secrets don't stay secrets for too long. But I want you to think about the secrets we have in our life of sin. Turn with me. We're going to turn two places here. Turn with me to the book of Ecclesiastes. Book of Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, as Solomon is getting through with all of his findings on life and what it really means to live in this world, he says something at the very end in verse 13. He says, let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep His commandments, for this is man's all. But listen to what he says in verse 14. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Every secret thing, whether good or evil. Now, I will say, a lot of times we focus on the evil side of that. And we say, well, we better be careful what we do, but also the good we do in secret, God knows about, because God's watching. I think Joseph understood this concept. His secrets wouldn't remain secrets with God. There are several other verses we can go to help illustrate this, but this gives the main idea that when no one is watching here, we'll give an account to the one who is always watching. Secrets won't stay secret. Matthew chapter 12, verse 36 says, but I say to you that for every idle word, some of your versions might say secret words. Men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. We might pull the wool over everyone else's eyes, but not God's. And lastly, as I leave you this evening, when no one else is watching, just remember who you are. That's another thing my dad would yell out at us as we would go out on Friday and Saturday nights with our friends. He would always tell us, have fun, enjoy yourself, I love you, remember who you are. It was a reminder that I'd been taught a certain way. I've been taught through my mom and my dad how to act. Where to go, where to not go, what to do, what not to do. He said, remember who you are. He would also throw out another one. He would say, remember whose last name you wear. Because if I was ever caught doing something I wasn't supposed to do, it was not just me that had to suffer, it was my whole family. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times as Christians, we forget that. But it seems like when nobody else is watching, that's when we have free rein to do whatever we want to do. I remember going to college for the first time, and it was an incredible freedom because my parents were in California and I was in Florida. And I'll never forget the realization. We had a crazy just thought one Saturday morning, my friends and I driving to Georgia. I had never been to Georgia. I was a West Coast kid, never been to Georgia. I wanted a Georgia peach. And so, supposedly they're better in Georgia. And so we said, hey, let's go to Georgia today. It's about a 3.5-hour drive from Tampa to the first stop in Georgia. I forget what it is. But we said, hey, we got plenty of time. 9 in the morning. Curfew's not till midnight tonight. Let's go to Georgia. So we were an hour on the road. I thought, I should probably tell Mom and Dad I'm going to Georgia. So I called Mom and Dad. I said, hey, we're going to Georgia. Just thought you should know. She goes, I really don't think that's a good idea, Kevin. I don't think it's a good idea to drive. My mom's a worrywart. I don't think you should be going and driving that. You know, I don't know who you're in the car with. I really don't think that's a good idea. That was the first time it hit me. Mom's in California. I'm already on the road. What's she going to do to me? And there's so many times where we find ourselves in our spiritual lives already on the road to sin. We're already halfway there. If we're factoring God into the equation when we're already on the road to sin, it's too late. We need to, long before we step onto the road to partake in whatever sin it is, that's when we need to remember who we are. Now, I wasn't in trouble for going to Georgia that day, and my mom really didn't care. But it was the first time I realized I can make my own decisions. And I need to remember what Mom and Dad taught me growing up. If Joseph taught us one thing, it said, above all else, we are God's children. What if God were to say, remember whose name you wear? Remember who you are. Look at what it says in Galatians chapter 3, starting in verse 26. It says, you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free. There is neither male nor female. For you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. This is who we are. This is whose name we wear. As many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. This is who we are. Even when nobody else is watching, even when it seems like I can get away with whatever it is that I'm participating in, God is there and I'm still wearing His name. And even in the most dire and enticing circumstances, like Joseph was in, even when sin and temptation look so appealing, even when no one else is looking, we are still God's people. And we need to act like it. That's another thing I tell my kids all the time at home. How old are you? Can you act like it? Sometimes my wife might need to tell that to me too. Sometimes we just need to hear it. Whose are we? We're God's. We have an elder at Marion Street. Many of you know Buddy Kettner. Every time he gives announcements at the end of the service, last thing he leaves us with is, remember who you are and remember whose you are. And it's just a good reminder that as we go throughout the rest of our week, we are still God's. We are God's children and His people. You know, I met one person from a reality TV show. And I was so disappointed because I thought, you are nothing like what you are on TV. You ever met someone like that? That's because when the cameras are off, there's someone completely different. Sometimes when the cameras are off in our lives and no one else is looking, that's when we feel like we could be different. But if there's one thing we learn from Joseph, it's that he was the same. He was the same when he was thrown in the pit as he was when he was thrown into prison. He was the same when He was at the very bottom of life than He was when He was second in command over all of Egypt. That when His dad had passed away and His brothers had feared for their lives, saying, Joseph is going to get us now because Daddy's gone. Joseph said, no. Yeah, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. His life was about Jesus, or about God, where our life needs to be about Jesus and God, serving them each and every day of our life, even when nobody else is watching, to hold the integrity and the character that we see Joseph hold, to know that one day all those secret things will be brought into judgment, to know that one day if our life is lived right here, we serve God and remember who we are, heaven is there. What an amazing time that will be to know that you and I will get to enjoy heaven together. Because even when no one was watching, we still chose God. You want to be in heaven one day? I think we're all here because we want to. But there might be some here this evening that have not made that choice to give God their all, to give their life completely to God. Jesus said that we cannot serve two masters. We can't have one foot in this world and one foot in eternity. We have to choose this day whether it's going to be God or this world. Are you ready to make that choice? Are you ready to be buried in the waters of baptism so that you can rise up in newness of life? So that you could choose God? And you could serve Him with everything that you have? Don't wait a moment longer. You can come now as we stand and as we sing.